Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are wrestling with something huge, a concept that shapes almost everything we do, really, from, you know, big financial decisions right down to crossing the street. Risk.
That's right, and we're digging into a fantastic guide, Risk, a very short introduction by Baruch Fischoff and John Cadvaney.
And it feels incredibly relevant, doesn't it? Because the authors point out this persistent gap.
Definitely. A damaging gap, really. You've got the experts, engineers, scientists, policymakers talking about risk with numbers, probabilities, formulas.
Yeah, the cold, hard data approach.
Exactly. And then there's the public, us, and how we feel about risk, which is often driven by emotions, gut feelings, social factors. Sometimes even fear that seems, well, out of proportion to the stat.
And that disconnect, it causes real problems. Policies stall, money gets wasted, people just stop trusting the institutions meant to protect them.
Yeah.
Precisely. So our mission today is to try and bridge that gap, understand why it exists.
We're going to unpack why managing risk effectively isn't just about the math. It needs, well, everything. Science, sure, but also psychology, understanding people, and being aware of social context. It's truly multidisciplinary.
Let's start with the authors. Who are these minds behind this integrated view?
Okay, first up, Baruch Fischoff. He's a real heavyweight in this field, professor at Carnegie Mellon, a pioneer in decision science. But crucially, his background is in psychology.
Ah, so not just the numbers guy.
Exactly. He wasn't just interested in calculating risk, but in how people actually perceive it, understand it, react to it. That's a fundamentally different angle.
And he worked with major groups like the National Academy of Sciences.
Yeah, for decades. So he saw firsthand what happens when communication about risk goes sideways in the real world, in policy circles. He's basically one of the founders of studying risk perception psychologically. Why do we fear flying more than driving, even when stats say driving is riskier? That kind of question.
Okay, I see. And who's the other author, John Cadvaney?
Cadvaney complements Fischoff perfectly. His expertise is more in philosophy, statistics, risk analysis itself. He brings that critical eye to the models, the math, questioning the limits of quantitative approaches, the nature of uncertainty itself.
So you've got the psychologist looking at human perception and the philosopher statistician examining the technical foundations and their limits.
Exactly. That synergy is the book's engine. Fischoff provides the why behind public reactions, the empirical stuff. Cadvaney digs into the how and if of the technical models.
And together they argue you absolutely need both. You can't manage risk well if you ignore either the technical side or the human side.
Which brings us right to their main argument, the core thesis.
Yeah.
Forget that simple formula you might have learned. Risk, probability X, consequence.
Right, the Econ 101 definition.
They argue that's way too simplistic for most real-world risks. They say risk is messy, it's human, it's tangled up with our values, our ethics, what we care about as a society.
That simple formula might work for, I don't know, predicting defects in a factory line, maybe. But when you're talking about things involving human lives or the environment decades from now, or things people feel strongly about.
It just falls apart. The book walks you through this beautifully. Starts with the math, the technical definitions.
And it systematically shows why that's not enough, moving into the psychology, the social dynamics.
And their central critique is pretty sharp. If you only use technical tools, you're basically set up to fail because you're ignoring how people actually think, how societies actually function.
It's the fear factor, the trust issue, the community values.
Yeah.
All the human stuff.
So effective risk management has to be interdisciplinary. It involves stats, psychology, sociology, communication. It's complex.
Okay, let's dig deeper then. Where do the technical approaches, the number crunching, actually start?
Well, the experts begin with tools like PRA, probabilistic risk assessment, and cost-benefit analysis. Trying to quantify everything, map out failure points, assign probabilities. Think engineers designing a nuclear plant.
Sounds rigorous. And useful in certain contexts.
Absolutely. But the book really highlights where these neat equations hit a wall in the real world. The limitations of quantification.
Okay, like what kind of limitations?
One big one is dealing with deep uncertainty. These models are often built on past data, so they really struggle with black swan events.
The completely unexpected, game-changing surprises, things you just couldn't have predicted from history.
Exactly. By definition, they aren't in the data set the model uses. And another issue is complex systems.
You mean how one little thing going wrong can trigger a massive unforeseen chain reaction?
Precisely. Non-linear effects. Think of financial crises or complex technological failures. The models often can't capture those cascading interactions.
And the danger there is, what? That we think we understand the risk better than we do.
That's a huge part of it. The apparent precision of these models, all the decimal places, can create an illusion of control. It makes decision makers feel safer than they perhaps should, potentially overlooking the biggest uncertainties.
Which might explain why the public sometimes seems, well, out of sync with expert assessments. People get terrified of, say, a new food additive with tiny calculated risks, but ignore much bigger risks they take every day.
Are we just irrational then? That's the key question the book tackles.
And the answer is a resounding no. The public isn't necessarily irrational. They're just using a different, often richer set of criteria that the purely technical models deliberately leave out.
Okay, so how do we understand these different criteria?
This is where the psychometric paradigm comes in. It's a real aha moment in the book. It suggests we perceive risk based on its qualitative characteristics, not just the probability of harm.
Qualitative, like how it feels.
Sort of. Two key dimensions jump out. First, dread risk.
Dread risk, okay.
Risks feel much scarier, much higher, if they're seen as uncontrollable, potentially catastrophic, maybe fatal, and importantly, involuntary things imposed on us.
Like flying in a plane versus driving a car. Even if driving is statistically riskier, flying feels more dreadful because you have zero control and the consequence could be catastrophic.
Exactly. Compare that to falling off a ladder at home. You feel more in control, it feels less dreadful, even though it might be a common source of injury.
Makes sense. What's the second dimension?
The second is unknown risk. These are risks that seem new, mysterious, maybe have delayed consequences, or science doesn't fully understand them yet.
Like radiation, or maybe the long-term effects of GMOs for some people. Things we can't easily see or grasp.
Right. We tend to fear what's hidden, what feels uncertain scientifically.
And on top of these factors, we're also prone to cognitive biases, right?
Absolutely. The book highlights the availability heuristic. This is a big one.
That's where we judge how likely something is by how easily we can remember examples of it.
Precisely. And the media plays a huge role here. If you see constant news coverage of shark attacks, even though they're incredibly rare,
you start thinking beaches are terrifyingly dangerous.
Even though, statistically, you're probably more likely to get hurt driving to the beach, our brains latch on to vivid, easily recalled examples, often amplified by media focus, and overestimate those risks compared to more common, less dramatic ones.
Okay, so if public perception is shaped by dread, the unknown, and these mental shortcuts, then just throwing statistics at people isn't going to work, is it?
Not at all. And that makes risk communication incredibly tricky. The authors strongly criticize what they call the deficit model.
The idea that the public is just an empty bucket, and experts just need to pour in enough facts until we get it.
Exactly. That approach usually backfires. It comes across as arrogant, dismissive, and it breeds distrust. People feel lectured, not heard.
So what's the alternative?
They push hard for two-way collaborative communication. It starts with listening, using something called the mental models approach.
Mental models, meaning you first try to understand what people already believe, their existing ideas, values, fears, even misconceptions.
Yes. You start where the audience is, not where you think they should be. You engage with their concerns respectfully.
Because if you don't, you get those situations, like with some public health campaigns or environmental issues, where poor communication leads to chaos.
Right. Either people panic excessively, overreacting based on fear, or they become totally complacent and resistant because they feel ignored or patronized.
The goal isn't just getting people to comply. It's enabling informed choices based on shared understanding and trust.
And this need for understanding systems extends beyond individuals. The book looks at organizational failures, too.
Like the Three Mile Island nuclear accident.
That's a key example they use. They show it wasn't just one person making a mistake. It was a result of flawed system design, confusing interfaces, and importantly, an organizational culture that didn't encourage reporting problems or near misses.
So blaming individuals misses the point. You need to fix the system, the culture.
Definitely. And it's zooming out even further to society-wide risks. Mm. Climate change, pandemics.
Huge, complex problems that cross borders and stretch over long timelines with lots of uncertainty.
Managing those requires integrating the scientific expertise with democratic processes, with public values. This is where ideas like the precautionary principle become relevant.
Which basically says, what? If there's a plausible threat of serious harm, you don't necessarily wait for absolute scientific proof before taking sensible precautions.
That's the gist of it, especially if the potential harm is irreversible. It emphasizes proactive measures and demands transparency and public involvement in deciding what levels of risk are acceptable. It's about navigating uncertainty responsibly.
Okay, let's try to pull together the really big things here. What's the absolute core message?
I think theme one has to be the interdisciplinary requirement. We've hit this a few times, but it's central.
You just can't manage risk effectively looking through only one lens.
Nope. You need the stats, the hard facts, you need the psychology, how people actually process information and react, and you need the social awareness, understanding the values in context. It's like a three-legged stool. Take one leg away, and the whole thing collapses.
It makes me think about something like AI safety. You need the technical rules, for sure, but you also have to understand how users will interact with it, their biases, and then society needs to debate the ethical lines. You need all three.
Exactly, which leads smoothly into theme two. Risk is a social construct.
Okay, this one sounds a bit more philosophical. What does that mean in practice?
It means that the very act of defining what risk we measure and how we value its consequences isn't purely objective. It's shaped by human choices, by societal values.
So there's no such thing as a completely value-free risk assessment.
Pretty much. Think about a new factory. One group might focus on the economic benefits and accept some pollution as a necessary trade-off. Another group might see that same pollution as an unacceptable threat to their health or environment.
The disagreement isn't just about the pollution levels, the data. It's about what they value more. Economic growth or environmental justice, for example.
Precisely. The facts might be agreed upon, but the significance of those facts is debated based on values.
And if risk decisions are tied up in values, that must make theme three of the primacy of trust absolutely critical.
Hugely critical. Often, whether the public accepts a risk, like a new vaccine, or a policy change, depends less on the technical data presented.
And more on whether they trust the people or institutions managing that risk.
Exactly. If that trust is broken, it doesn't matter how good your data is, people won't buy it. The messenger, the institution, becomes the focus, not the message itself.
That's a tough lesson. No amount of charts and graphs can fix a fundamental lack of trust.
The book really has some powerful lines that capture these ideas.
Yeah, they managed to distill complex thoughts really well. I like this one. Risk is both a technical and social concept. Ignoring either dimension leads to failed risk management.
That sums up the core mission perfectly. You have to integrate the numbers and the people.
And this one really reframes the public perception issue. The public is not irrational about risk. They simply use different criteria than experts.
Yes, that's so important.
Right.
It moves us away from just dismissing public fears as dumb and forces us to acknowledge other valid factors like control, fairness, catastrophic potential that people rightly care about.
It encourages empathy, really. And then there's the one that keeps you on your toes. The most dangerous risks, maybe those we're not looking for.
That's a call for vigilance. It highlights those unknown risks, the novel threats, the black swans. We can't just get good at managing the risks we already know. We need systems that can adapt to surprises.
So how can we, use these insights in our own lives?
Well, take medical decisions. Instead of just hearing there's a 5% chance of X complication.
You could ask more questions based on your values.
Right. Ask the doctor. Okay, what would that complication actually mean for my quality of life? How does it affect the things I care about doing? It helps align the decision with your personal priorities, not just the statistics.
That's really practical. And on a broader level, it helps us be better consumers of news, maybe.
Definitely. You can start recognizing when the media might be playing on that availability heuristic.
Focusing heavily on dramatic, rare events like maybe a freak accident, while ignoring the bigger ongoing systemic risks like, say, chronic disease rates or infrastructure decay.
Exactly. You can ask yourself, is this getting attention because it's truly the biggest threat or because it makes for a vivid, easily recalled story?
We could even apply it to something like financial planning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Understanding these biases helps you avoid panic selling during market dips just because the news is screaming, crisis!
You recognize the emotional reaction, the availability bias, and maybe stick to your long-term strategy, acknowledging there's always uncertainty, rather than trying to perfectly predict the unpredictable. Focus on adaptive strategies.
So wrapping up, what was the most surprising thing for you from this deep dive?
For me, it was really internalizing that point about values, realizing that so many public arguments about risk, climate change, new tech, whatever, aren't really arguments about the scientific facts themselves. They're fundamentally clashes over values and priorities. What kind of future do we want? What trade-offs are acceptable? Seeing it that way, it changes how you listen to those debates.
That's a powerful insight. For me, the key takeaway is maybe slightly different. It's the realization that the goal isn't, and can't be, to eliminate risk entirely. That's impossible. And trying to achieve it would paralyze us.
Right. Life is inherently risky.
Exactly. So the real goal is to design better systems, whether it's our personal decision-making habits, the way our organizations operate, or how society governs itself, systems that are transparent, that can learn and adapt, and that manage uncertainty with human nature biases and values included right at the center of the design. Not trying to engineer humans out of the equation, but designing for humans.
Well put. Managing uncertainty with human nature in mind.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.